Sorry, I don't know.
What song were you singing?
That's from, that's like a Jack White, what is it?
Oh, Seven Nation Army.
Yes.
I actually love the White Stripes.
Me too.
All about it. I love the White Stripes. I think the Redcon Tours are coming out with a new album, which is Jack White's band. Or maybe they have. I don't know. I heard a new song recently. So
yeah, I like them too.
I'd love to see them in concert.
Hmm.
It's pretty great. Yeah. I think they're playing at like one of those like festivals. I want to say they might be at like playing at Music Midtown or something. I'm just like, I'm
not a festival gal.
You know, I'm a little too old for festivals at this point. Like, I don't want to be a stick in the mud. But even when I was young and in my 20s and day drinking, festivals were like, I was like, oh, there's a lot of people here. It's hard to find the bathroom.
Yeah, I'm a little crowd hating for festivals.
Yeah, and I've seen some good bands. The nice thing about a festival is you get to see a lot of great, like I got to see Run DMC, and I saw the Flaming Lips, and I saw Gnarls Barkley, and like and Wolf Mother. There's like a lot of group. I saw Iron and Wine, like they were all like part of the same festival too, and I enjoyed seeing a bunch of awesome people like buying one ticket. Like that's nice. I'm all about value.
The only festival I've been
but
to,
but it's exhausting.
Is a metal festival.
When Are you serious?
When I went out with a guy who was in a band.
Oh, yeah. God. I dated somebody who was a heavy metal band, too.
Yeah.
I hate heavy metal. Like, I'm sorry. I don't want to isolate any of our heavy metal listening viewers, but I think the only thing I probably hate more is bluegrass music. I hate bluegrass and I hate metal. And I'm so sorry if those are your preferred cups of tea, but... You know, we all have our things, and I can't stand bluegrass music, and I cannot stand heavy metal.
Yeah.
Just can't do it.
It upsets me.
It does upset me. It upset, it's like my nerves get on edge. Yeah. Maybe that's the point.
It's the point, yeah.
But I don't like it.
It's like spicy food. Like, I love spicy food because it's painful.
And spicy food gives me diarrhea.
Okay.
Just like metal does.
Yes, okay.
Have I ever told you the story about how Chris and I went to one of those like free concerts in the park? It was for Cake, the band Cake.
Okay. No, you haven't told me.
So it was in the early 2000s, of course. And Chris, it was one of those super crowded like free concert. They used to hold these concerts at like Centennial Park. And we were all there. The music was about to start, and then Chris was like, "I'm just gonna go get some nachos," and I was like, "How are you gonna find your way back here?" And he's like, "It's fine, I know where you are." And he went to get nachos and never came back. Like, I didn't see him again. Me and my friend, walked around afterwards, could not find him anywhere, even after everyone cleared out. We were like talking to police officers.
Oh no.
It was like, I couldn't enjoy the concert because I was like, my boyfriend went out for nachos and he never came back. And I was like, oh my God.
I think you have to lose this, but I forget how it ends.
It ends with, and we didn't have cell phones. Like, right. We had like pagers or something. Like, we didn't have cell phones back then. So, or we did and his was dead, or I don't know. So what ended up happening is I think we ended up meeting up, finding him at the MARTA station or something.
Oh my God. What was his excuse?
He was like, "I couldn't find you." He's like, "I had my nachos and then I didn't know where we were. I couldn't find you. You were lost in the crowd."
So, but after everyone had cleared out,
he thought the easiest way to find us would be to go back to the MARTA station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He wasn't intentionally trying to scare us. He thought the most logical solution was to go back to the MARTA station.
Okay. I'll need to talk to him about this afterwards.
Oh, boy. Okay. Welcome to the George Made Podcast.
Welcome.
Welcome. I'm one of your hosts, Nicole.
I'm Sarah.
And we talk about film and filmmaking in Georgia. And today, before we get to our main topic, what have you been watching, Sarah?
Well, actually, last night I started watching this show on Netflix called Dead to Me.
Ooh.
And it's starring Christina Applegate, Linda Cardellini. I don't know.
I think it's Cardellini.
Cardellini.
Yeah. Two of my favorite actors.
I love them. And James Marsden.
Thank God, because I was really concerned about him when I saw that trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog. I was like, James no! Marsden, you don't have to do this kind of stuff anymore. You're on Westworld.
I know. So the three of them are awesome. And basically, I've only seen the first four episodes. There are ten episodes, I think.
It'll spoil me if I know who James Marsden plays, probably, right?
Yeah, no. I'm not going to give details because I want everyone to watch this. It's so good. But basically, the idea is there are these three people, and the premise is that Christina Applegate has lost her husband to a hit and run.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I think I know where this might be going.
Yeah, and so I don't know if I can say any more than that. Like,
yeah,
it's
don't
just,
spoil
yeah.
me on it. But she meets Linda Cardellini in like a grief counseling
yes.
or something, right?
Yes,
like a grief group. Because I saw that in the trailer.
She lost her husband too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's how it begins.
Okay.
Cool. But it is very well written, very well acted. It has humor, but it's very dark. And it just is, you're always on your toes. There are a few
Does
moments.
Does it satisfy my true crime urges?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm excited.
And
yes.
But it's also very psychological, and you're not sure what they are. Like, what these, like, who is what? Like, you're not sure if they're a psychopath or if they're normal or if they're... Like, it's just, you're always guessing. There was one moment in the last episode I saw where you were like, oh, well, this is about to happen. And then it was like, oh, I was not expecting that because it's set it up to be like
mm-hmm.
a certain way. And no, it's
I love
it's,
that. I love it when I get surprised.
Very, 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 very good. So you should definitely watch it. All of you guys out there
okay.
should watch it. I've only seen the first four episodes, but.
Ooh, yeah. Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like you can tell in four, I try to give a show at least, well, I guess now with seasons being much shorter, I might give them like three, but I call it the walkabout effect because when I was watching Lost, which I know you haven't seen, I was like, oh, this show's all right. You know, like I like mm-hmm. it. It's good. But it wasn't until episode four, walkabout, mm-hmm. that I was like, this show is fucking amazing. Well, so I usually try to give a show like three or four episodes before I throw in
the towel.
I mean,
this show starts strong. Like, it's strong okay. throughout the entire first episode. And then the way the first episode ends reminds me of the ending of the first episode of Westworld.
Oh.
Where she hits the
yeah,
the fly. Bug, yeah. And it's like all throughout the episode, it's like she wouldn't hurt a fly. And then the end of the first episode, yeah. she like kills the fly.
Oh.
It's one of those moments where it's okay. like, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you yeah. have me intrigued.
It's good.
You have me intrigued. Speaking of true crime, I watched, oh God, I'm going to mess up the name. It's the Ted Bundy movie with Zac Efron. Wickedly evil
and totally shockingly evil and wicked. Hold on.
Shockingly
evil and wickedly vile. Shockingly vile and...
Something like that. It's on Netflix. Zac Efron doesn't need our publicity. Okay? People are going to find the movie. It's a fucking Ted Bundy movie with Zac Efron in it. You yes. know what I'm talking about.
Search it. Google
Search
it.
Search for Google it.
Yahoo it.
It did play at the Atlanta Film Festival.
It did.
And it sold out.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Did he come? Did Zac Efron come?
Was Zac Efron here? I don't think so.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I mean, I feel like I would know if he was here. Like, I feel like I would have heard something about that, but I don't think so. We would have felt it.
He's too young for you. He's too young for you.
He's older than Ross Lynch from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Ross Lynch is 23. He's too young for me.
He's too young for any of us, but at least I don't feel like a dirty old woman.
Zac Efron, I think, is him. My age or
okay,
something.
Okay, look, this is the topic here, is that Zac Efron is an attractive man playing
yes.
Ted Bundy, right?
Yes.
So a lot of the criticism of this movie was he makes Ted Bundy too hot, right?
Uh-huh.
I will refute that because, yes, Zac Efron is hot, but I think they use his hotness and to make him unnerving.
Yes.
Like, I felt he was unnerving. They did little things where, like, he'd be like making out with his, first of all, the movie's not about the murder. So if you came to see Zac Efron brutally murdering people, this is not your movie. Okay. It's really more about his relationship with his girlfriend who he was with at the time of the murders, and the trial.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And like him, it's really a lot about him like gaslighting this woman and like and her trying to get over him. But I'll get to a little bit more into that in a second. But so, yeah, there are scenes of him like making out with her and like her like looking at him dreamily. But like they were unnerving to me. Like, yeah. I feel like the way that they portrayed them was that it was unnerving, because it'd be like they'd be making out, but then he'd like just really just subtly like put a hand, his hand around her neck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was disturbing. So yeah. I feel like they were using that to a purpose.
Ted Bundy, that's the thing that he had everyone fooled, was that he was, in a weird way, sexy. I mean, he wasn't
Zac Efron hot.
He wasn't Zac Efron hot, but he had a vibe about him that was...
A dashing mediocre white man quality. Yes. Yes.
And I haven't seen this film yet, but I bet that's
I liked it.
All the screenshots and the preview that I saw, I think Zac Efron
was very good.
Yeah.
Now my complaint was the movie seemed to be about the woman and him, but at some point it's like they didn't know what to do with her anymore. Like once she was starting to distance herself from him, it was just like, well, I guess let's cut to another shot of her drinking while watching Ted Bundy's trial. And it's like, I really just wanted a little bit more from about her and what was like, what about her daughter? Like, is her relationship with her daughter strained? Because she's like, I don't know. It felt like they really were, like her character seemed more important at the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then the more it focused on Ted, the less it focused on her. And I was like, it was like all leading up to this one critical scene at the end, which was good. But then there was all this bit in the middle where it seemed like they didn't really know what to do with her character. So that was my big criticism, was that I was like, well, is this movie about her or is it not about her? I mean, I know it's about Ted, but it seemed like it was also about her. John Malkovich was in it and he was also very good as well. So, yeah, check it out if you're a true crime fan.
So who played the girlfriend?
My God, Lily Collins?
I don't know.
She was in, what was that movie? There was a movie on Netflix about a woman who was in recovery for anorexia, and I can't remember what it's called right now. It was something bone. Not Winter's Bone. That's
I was about to say, yeah, that's Jennifer Lawrence.
Anyway, she was good. She was good. She was, like I said, I feel like they could have given her more.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to give her something more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, give it a look-see. Zac Efron was really good as Ted Bundy. It was very unsettling. Chris watched it with me and was, I think, a little disturbed by how much knowledge I knew, how much information I had about Ted Bundy.
Was he disturbed?
Well, he was just like, okay. Those of you out there who are true crime fans or murderinos, if you listen to the My Favorite Murder podcast, know this look. When you're talking about a murder or you're watching something about a murder and a normal person sits down next to you and you begin rattling off details about the thing that you're watching, and then they get this look of horror on their face, like, why would you even let your brain hold on to these facts?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of look that I'm talking about.
But is he surprised? Doesn't he know you listen to MFM?
Yeah, but still, I'm talking about these vile things that, you know, because there's like there's the scene where, you know, he gets free. They don't show it, but he goes to the sorority and he gets captured. And the sorority house murder is what gets him convicted because of the bite. Yes. And I knew that because, you know, I'd heard it on another podcast.
Right.
So I was like, oh, this is where he goes down because, you know, he bites one of the girls and the bite mark is what gets him convicted. And Chris is just like looking at me like, why do you know this information? What did I marry?
Oh, come on.
Anyway, so check it out. We can't say the title properly, but I'm pretty sure it'll just pop up on your Netflix.
Yeah, it'll.
Evil and shocking and wicked.
And vile.
And some shit. Oh, before we get into the movie, there was one other thing I wanted to talk about, which was I recently was on set with J&J Productions.
Yes.
Acting in one of their sketch videos.
How was that?
It was really fun. J&J Productions, they started around the same time that we did. Jill and Joanna Pasichnik. This film was written and directed by Joanna. And so she was directing, female DP. And then and I was acting in it with Syl. Lauren Schmuck is also in it. And yeah, it was really fun. I wasn't acting with Lauren. She was in a different scene.
Okay. But you were acting with Syl?
Yes. So, again, speaking of true crime, it's about, it's a true crime sketch. It's a comedy, is a sketch video about true crime, which was perfect
for me. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I can't wait to see it either. So, yeah, look out for it. I think she said they might be finishing it up sometime this summer.
What's the name?
The Cross Country Killer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, but I had a really great time. It was good to be on set. I worked with them a lot, usually behind the scenes doing audio. And so this time it was exciting to be acting
in one
of their sketches. So it was awesome. I had a great time. It was great to be invited to come in and play.
Yeah.
So shall we dive back into our discussion about Smokey and the Bandit?
Mustaches and trucks.
Mustaches,
and
cars.
And Coors.
And screaming. And Coors.
Coors and cars.
This episode, sponsored by Coors.
Yes.
Well, go, girl, go!
I'm going! I got the metal to the pedal and the thing to the floor.
Okay, so did you write anything about the stuntman guy?
Which stuntman?
The director.
I didn't. I do have something about the stunts, but I'm saving it for later.
He is the highest, or what, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but as the highest paid stuntman in the world, Hal Needham broke 56 bones, his back twice, punctured a lung, and knocked out a few teeth. His career included work on 4,500 television episodes and 310 feature films as a stuntman, stunt coordinator, second unit director, and ultimately director.
Damn. Well, that was a guy who was not taking his career setting down.
No.
Well, I can kind of see why this movie is so aggressively masculine.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. That's a lot.
Yeah.
My next question.
Yes.
Did Coors sponsor this movie?
I think it did. I didn't see anything about it, but it had to, right?
I mean, it was everywhere. It was like the main topic of the movie.
They said
there were like people who were just side characters wearing shirts with Coors on it. Like, was it a joke or was Coors like fronting some money for this movie?
Yeah.
I just had to wonder.
They had to, right?
I mean, they were. It's like I feel like I was being subliminally.
Yes.
Manipulated to enjoy
a cold
can of Coors.
I don't drink beer, but I was hankering for some Coors after a while.
Oh, man. It's basically like water, but like water flavored. It's like beer flavored water. Somebody dropped a couple drops of real beer in there. My next question.
Yes.
Are you familiar with the Dukes of Hazzard?
I know the name. I know that one of the actors went on to be in Smallville, a show that I loved. So I know.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
that actor. But I never watched the show.
So let me see if some of this sounds familiar to you. So The Dukes of Hazzard is about two brothers, Beau and Luke Duke.
Okay.
They drive around in a muscle car called the General Lee. That has a Confederate flag painted on the top.
Great.
And they basically drive around town getting into shenanigans. And they're constantly being pursued by the local law enforcement. His name is Boss Hogg, who screams at them a lot and chases them around in this car. Okay. They jump over bridges. And there's also a woman, a side character named Daisy Dukes
who
wears short shorts.
That became known as
Daisy Dukes, yeah.
Daisy Dukes, yes.
So does anything about that sound familiar to this movie?
Yes, it does.
Down to the woman, down to Hot Pants. There's a woman in this movie named Hot Pants.
Yeah.
So at first I was like, well, this movie basically ripped off the Dukes of Hazzard, and then I looked it up, and this came out in 77. Dukes of Hazzard started airing in 1979.
Mm.
Was there any kind of lawsuit? Like, it seems like they basically took this movie and made it into a TV show with two brothers.
I think if we look back, there are probably lots of cars in shows.
So you think there's a lot of car? Do you think the 70s was a car?
Muscle cars.
A car time?
Definitely. I mean, like, yeah, there are lots of people who love cars.
It seems very similar. Like, this movie is about a man in a muscle car being pursued by a plump, shouty sheriff.
Uh-huh.
Which is basically what the other show is about as well.
Okay.
Fun fact. Dukes of Hazzard also filmed in Georgia. In fact, filmed on the parts of it filmed on the campus where I went to college.
I wouldn't mind if we watched an episode of that.
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
If it was shot here.
Sure. Let's do it.
I haven't seen
now that is something I watched when I was a kid, was the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see a young John Snyder.
His butt looks good in some tight jeans. Not going to lie.
Okay.
He's got a nice butt.
How does he feel about the Confederate flag now?
I'm not sure if he's said anything about it.
Okay.
I mean, I would like to point out that at this time, the Georgia state flag had the Confederate stripes on it. And in fact, that the Georgia state flag was on a license plate on the front of the bandit's car in this movie.
True.
So.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was good or right, but that's how it was. I think we all.
In fact, you're saying the exact opposite.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think it's fucking bullshit that we ever had the Confederate stripes on our flag. But in the 70s, people were pretty cool with it and fine with it.
Yeah. So,
all right. Next topic. I will say, one of the things I did kind of like about the movie was the whole subplot of the community of truckers.
Yes.
Like, all the people, like, he'd call in on the CB radio and there would be like a different, there'd be some guy with a funeral procession like coming through to block. I almost called him Boss Hog to block like Buford T. Justice from getting past. Or there was like hot pants.
Yeah. What was that? Was it like a drive through or like a drive? It was like some food place with lots of cars.
Oh, yeah. That was at Hot Pants. Hot Pants got everybody to get out of their cars and like block.
Yeah.
And then there was like another time where there was a bunch of truckers and they like hid him in between their trucks. So that was kind of cool.
What really amazed me was all of the car stunts. Like that must have taken forever to shoot.
Because they were all
so
real.
Expensive.
Yeah, there's like and deadly
and for it to have such a weak plot and weak characters,
well,
how would they justify spending that much on a film?
I think the plot was as strong as it needed to be for what the movie was about. True. I didn't fully understand the plot, which I thought was a problem.
But
as far as the plot and characters, I think they were about as strong as they needed to be for this movie. I don't think this was a movie that was looking to dig into the depths of humanity. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I mean, everybody was pretty straightforward.
Yes.
Does anyone go through an emotional change? No, I don't think so.
I mean, they fall in love, I guess, in a weird...
Do they? Or is it just a Creekside fuck? I mean...
Oh my God.
I'm not sure if
Hashtag
I would...
Creekside fuck.
Hashtag Creekside fuck. Put on your bug spray before attempting...
No, well, we didn't see it at all. Like...
The sex?
Yeah, no.
I was grateful for that. Did not want that.
All we saw was the hat.
Just the hat on top of the car. I don't think I wanted that.
Because back then, they didn't have sex scenes like they have now.
Also, this movie was not rated R. Yes. This was... I don't remember the rating. I want to say it was like PG because there were several times where they avoided curse words.
Yes. And actually, if you were a kid, you wouldn't have even known that they had sex. Like... It took a lot of inferring for even adults to know.
Yeah, it was a lot of innuendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I remember turning to Chris and going, did they have sex? Even I was confused about it. But that's fine. I don't need a passionate silhouetted sex scene by the creek while gnats fly around them. I don't need that. I'm fine, thanks. Can we talk about the scene in the restaurant where...
Which one?
The one where Buford T. Justice is talking while eating a burger.
Yes. Nicole is having such a hard time. Hates when people eat food.
I don't like food sounds on camera. I don't like the sounds of people's mouths eating on camera.
Yeah.
And he was like hossing down that burger and talking. I could not understand what the fuck he was saying. He was like spitting burger all over mm-hmm. the place. It was nightmarish.
Yeah.
It was one of the most harrowing scenes in the film, in my opinion. So one of the interesting elements of the movie was that everything is over CB radio, and it's the 70s, so nobody has any fucking pictures of who they're mm-hmm. chasing. So at this restaurant, Buford runs into Bandit but doesn't know that it's him. So they're like having a whole conversation. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long time for him to figure out who he is.
Bandit knows who he is because yes, he seems absolutely. Very nervous. But
well, no, he was messing with him. I feel
yes,
like.
But Buford T. Justice didn't know what he looked like.
Yeah, no. There, in fact, it was a big part of the cat and mouse game was for him to not know what he looked like, and in fact, at the end.
Mm-hmm.
When they get away, because they like, so they get down there, they go through this whole thing where they're driving. Buford T. Justice's car is just like getting fucking wrecked. Like at one point, they drive under a semi and manage to not get decapitated somehow, I guess, because this is a comedy. So,
but that still, would really bring down the mood. A dangerous stunt.
Yeah, like and a lot of the stunts in this movie seem dangerous.
Directed by. The world's most broken-boned
I guess
stuntman.
Back in the day, like, you were, like, being a stunt person was, like, you might die today.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's pretty rare now when people get dead. Because, like, seriously, on a set, like, it's a big deal. But,
yeah.
So we have different safety protocols and stuff. But, I mean, that, when that car, when that car goes under,
they ducked the truck, right at the last minute. Whoever was in that car,
it was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Also, no one is wearing seatbelts in this movie. No. Like, I these cars in the 70s are just basically like just metal coffins.
They are.
I mean, at this point, there were seatbelts in the 70s, right?
Mm.
I think there were seatbelts in the 70s. Maybe people just didn't wear them as often. I don't know. But also, maybe they just don't wear them in movies.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. No one was wearing a seatbelt in this movie.
Yeah.
Considering at the high speeds at which they were
Do
driving.
Do people wear seatbelts now in movies?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of, yeah. Because okay. then if you don't wear a seatbelt now, people are like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Now they're because if you have a character not wearing a seatbelt in a movie, now people are waiting for them to go flying through the windshield.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
Anyway, so they are pursued all the way back from Texas by this guy, the Buford T. Justice and his very, very dumb son. And then they get back to Enos and little Enos. I don't know what his son's name was, but he was
I hate played that name.
By he was played by the musician. I can't remember his name, but he's a record producer guy. Paul something, yes.
Williams?
Paul Williams, yeah. And so they get there. They finally get the Coors there, which, like, had to have the Coors. Couldn't be any other beer, right? And they get it there, and then they're like, okay, where's our money? And he's like, well, I'll pay you double or nothing if you drive all the way to Boston and get me some clam chowder. And they hop right on it. Mm-hmm. Like
including Sally Field.
Right, Sally Field, whose nickname is Frog at this point.
Yeah.
So we've got Bandit, Frog.
But where did Frog come from?
I don't remember. Oh, it's because she wants like a CB handle. She never tells him that she was going to marry that guy, does she? She never tells him, does she? Because like
what
this
do you
whole
mean?
Remember like at the beginning when he's being chased by the sheriff And he's like, I don't know why this guy's following me. And she's like, I don't know why this guy's following you either. And like the whole movie, you think, man, when is she going to tell him? I don't think she ever does.
Yeah.
I kind of got to give her a fist bump for that.
She does.
It's none of your business,
she
bandit.
She is trying to run away from a wedding, but she doesn't tell him that those guys who are chasing them are
right.
who she's trying to run away
right.
from.
So he never knows why he's being chased.
Why wouldn't he be more curious about that?
I think he just assumed, isn't it just part of the job of him like driving around and like getting the police off his tail? Like yeah. it's just, so this guy took it real personally and decided to follow him all the way from Texas.
Yeah.
Because they start in Texas, they end up back in Georgia. And then presumably they're driving to Boston for clam chowder, which I don't know if you've ever had clam chowder, but I don't think it's going to taste very good by the time you get it from Boston back to Georgia in a hot car.
But if it remains the same amount of heat the entire time, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I think it's a recipe for food poisoning, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least pack that shit in a cooler, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of cars had a really good AC back in the 70s.
No.
So, anyway, they take him up on it. But as they're leaving, they see Beaver T. Justice's shitty fucked up car, and he like pulls in. I did like that shot. I thought that was a good shot where you see Jackie Gleason in the foreground, and then you see Burt Reynolds and the car, because they've switched cars at this point.
Yeah.
So now Buford doesn't know what he's looking for, and so they're pulled off. And at this point, I think he still doesn't know what Bandit looks like.
No, he does not.
So he's behind him over like his left shoulder, and he like they get on the CB radio, and he's basically like, well, it's been a good ride and blah, 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 you know, like they're giving each other, you know, giving each other a little bit of a hard time there. And he's like, look over your shoulder. And he looks over at him and they drive off and then presumably continue to be pursued all the way to Boston.
Yeah. And so.
And that's basically the end.
That's the end.
It just like ends at that point.
It just is over.
Oh, my God. The other thing we didn't talk about was the music, Sarah.
Oh, my God.
The music in this movie.
Yeah, basically it tells the plot.
It's like interludes, again, aggressively Southern. It's like bluegrass interludes where somebody's like, I am now, Bandit's getting in the car and he's going to drive. And it's like telling you every single fucking thing that's going on. Honestly, it helped me out a little bit. It helps me to center myself. So I was like, what's happening? Oh, the song just told me he's on the run. Okay, I'm good.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
Also, we didn't talk about the opening.
Oh, please do. Please do.
It was basically truck porn.
It was like close-up hot truck porn.
Shots of all these different truck parts.
Wheels and gears.
And pistons and
it was truck porn.
Totally. Which I guess there are some people who like trucks.
Yeah, well, I feel like you'd have to like trucks to watch this movie. Maybe that's the problem, is this, we just don't love trucks enough.
I don't like cars, but I liked Cars. Pixar film.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a different tone here.
Yes, very different.
Yeah. Less truck porn.
Oh, yeah, no porn. No porn in Pixar movies.
No. Although, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere out there was a really low-budget porn based on a picture. Don't you think?
Yeah, you're right. There's, like, Simpsons porn.
People are freaks.
Yes.
I mean, whatever. Whatever your pleasure is, I guess. If you're a consenting adult, you can watch your Simpsons porn. Go for it. You know? Okay, one last thing I've got here. So, speaking of stunts.
Yes.
Remember when we were watching the scene where Sally Field is driving and they end up in the middle of a Little League game?
Yes.
And we immediately became terrified because I was like, they're going to hit those kids. I was like, that is insane. Like they're in the middle. They're driving through the middle of a Little League game. And these kids are ducking out of the way.
Was like, this a real stunt? There were real kids who.
Yes. Okay. So I saw it, and I'll try to drop it, the audio in here. I don't know. Maybe we'll link it on the page. But I found an interview on YouTube of Burt Reynolds talking about this movie. And he said that the stunt driver who was driving for. So he was in the car.
Burt
Reynolds was in the car and the stunt driver, the woman stunt driver, was driving. And at some point, as the car. So what was supposed to happen is the car was supposed to go into the over the bushes into the field near the Little League game, but not in the middle of the Little League game. So it was supposed to go near, and they were supposed to drive around the Little League game and then go out the gate and go as the way that it ended. Instead, something happened where the stunt woman, like, I think she became – he's now – this is Burt Reynolds' retelling of it, so I don't know. But basically, he said she was a really great stunt woman, and she had had an awesome career doing, like, physical stunts. But he indicated that maybe she had less experience with car stunts, and so she became a little freak. I guess she got freaked out. Again, this is, like, Burt Reynolds' retelling, so I don't really know, you know, what happened. But maybe something went wrong, and she drove right into the middle – of the Little League game, and the kids ducked. Like, the kids ducked so that the car wouldn't hit them.
And holy shit.
He said, because all the parents were there on set as well, of course, because you can't have your kids on set without the parents or some kind of guardian there. And he said that, again, this is Burt Reynolds retelling it.
Oh my God. He said
two mothers fainted. And then he spent the rest of the day apologizing to everyone and signing autographs. And he said the kids were fine. He said the kids were like, that was awesome. And the parents were like, what the fuck? And he spent the rest of the day apologizing to everyone.
I don't understand how.
And that's the shot that's in the film.
But did she drive the wrong way? Did she like.
That's what I don't get. He said that she got the nerves got to her at the last minute. But I feel like if the stunt was set up properly, that it never should have happened.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I don't know. I'm not a stunt person, but it seems unfair to blame her.
Do you think that it was Hal Needham who was like, let's make this a real stunt?
I don't think so, because those kids could have died. And I don't know if you've ever heard of have you heard of what happened on the set of the Twilight Zone movie back in the 1980s?
No.
So this is a really famous story about, so there was a, have you seen the Twilight Zone movie? John Lithgow's in it.
Not the movie.
Okay, well, it's a movie version where there's like, it's in, like several short films that are like the, you know, and it was produced by Steven Spielberg's company, I believe, Amblin.
Okay.
Unless I'm confusing that with Amazing Stories. Anyway, I don't have the actor's name in my brain right now, but basically there was an older actor who was like in his 60s or so, and there was a scene where he was running away from a helicopter in a lake, and it was like in Saigon, and he's carrying two children in his arms, right? So he's got like an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old in his arms, right? And he's running through the lake being pursued by helicopters. Well, the stunt, it was John Landis who was directing it. Sorry, I don't know if Steven Spielberg's company produced it, but John Landis was directing the scene. And so the helicopters are above them. They've got all the rain and wind machines going, right? There's a helicopter above them. And the helicopter starts flying too low. And it... there's all these explosions, and I think one of the explosions got the helicopter, and the helicopter starts – or maybe it was because it was going so – I can't remember exactly what happened, but the result was the helicopter turned over and started crashing into the lake, and it landed on top of this actor and the two children, killing them on
all
set.
All three of them?
Yeah. And in fact, John Landis and the AD and a lot of other people were sued – by the families of the children and the people and those remember if it was but I know the families of the
children. How did they release that film?
I'm not sure if that scene is not in the movie. I'm not sure if that segment is in the movie. I think the segment might still be in there. The footage does exist of the that was captured on set. And I don't remember what year that movie was filmed in, but I think that there were certainly some times where, and there was a lot of evidence to suggest that the care was just not taken to execute that stunt properly. And also the parents did not know that the children would be in the water with the helicopter. Like, they didn't know. And
why are kids involved children, in a stunt at all?
Yeah, they weren't supposed to. The parents didn't know they were going to be. So a lot of stuff was kind of done under the table. But so I think that what probably happened, I would hope, is that something just went wrong in setting up the stunt and that it was not intentional. Because killing kids on your film set is not something you want to do.
But I would.
But I remember when we watched that scene, we were like freaked out. I was like, that is way too close to those kids.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, If I had directed that, I would. I don't know if I would want to release that film. Like, not even...
Oh, the...
Like, the entire thing. If someone died.
Oh, you mean The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, and again, I may be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure they released most part of the film, but not the... that they didn't release that scene. That scene did not go in the film, obviously. Yeah. So they had... I think they had to end it some other way, but...
So sad.
Yeah. But No kids died in this scene with the car trace, fortunately, but it they got damn close. Like, the kids ducked.
I did not know how, like, because when it happened, I was like, there's no way they would have allowed that to happen for the car to get that close to those kids. There must have been some kind of
mistake
or something. Yeah.
Which Burt Reynolds fully blames on the female stunt driver.
Nice.
And maybe it was her fault. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I feel like the stunt has to be set up in a certain way for that to happen.
I do remember seeing the stunt woman as the car was coming around, and she looked crazy.
She was really like, oh shit, I'm about to kill like 10 kids. Oy. Okay. Final thoughts. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the sequels.
Okay.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts on Smokey and the Bandit.
Trucks and mustaches and...
Ha, ha, ha.
And, you
That's
know.
That's it. That's all you got to say.
Trucks and mustaches. I'm sorry.
Trucks and mustaches.
I didn't really care for it. It's not my jam.
It wasn't your jam.
But it was fun to watch with you.
Yeah, I think we had fun watching it. I enjoyed it even more when Chris showed up because Chris was really enjoying it.
Yes. He was beaming from ear to ear.
His enjoyment was infectious.
Yes. No, and sometimes, you know, it is fun to watch a mindless, fun film because...
Oh, all the time, yeah.
Because, like, not all films have to be, like, Ex Machina. They don't all need to be, like, super deep and, you know, thoughtful and stuff. So...
Sure.
I will say I had fun.
I did. I had fun watching it with you, for sure. And I feel like I got a little piece of Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
This was
the first Burt Reynolds film I saw.
I've seen... You didn't watch Striptease, I guess.
I didn't, no.
We watched Striptease on the Feminine Mistake podcast in season two?
Season two, yeah.
I had seen Burt Reynolds on Empty Nest and a bunch of other stuff, too. But yeah, I feel like this was my real... You know what? I tell you what, though. I really have new appreciation for Norm Macdonald's impersonation of Burt Reynolds on Celebrity Jeopardy after watching this movie. I was like, wow, he nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, nailed it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess before we wrap up this discussion, I wanted to talk a little bit about the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Because after we watched this, we were like, isn't there Smokey and the Bandit 2? What the hell is that about? So immediately after this we watched the trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Burt Reynolds sporting some kind of members only jacket. He's definitely like moved. He transitioned into more of an 80s attire, mm-hmm. I'd say, for the second movie. Okay. So we watched the trailer for that, but the synopsis for the second movie is Folk Hero. That's a broad statement. Folk Hero Bandit has fallen on bad times, but comes to life when he is hired to help transport a pregnant elephant to a Republican convention in Dallas. Arch enemy Sheriff Buford T. Justice catches wind of the deal and resolves to spoil the bandit's comeback.
Elephants.
Right. So it's basically the same plot as this movie. Same characters. Enos is back.
Okay.
Sally Field is back.
Snowball
is back. Snowball's driving the elephant, remember?
Okay, right.
So it's same plot, only now there's an elephant and Dom DeLuise. Dom DeLuise
is
also
it directed
in this
by
movie.
The same guy?
Oh, good question.
Why I think would maybe... you involve poor creatures into your stunts?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping the elephant was not actually in the car when they were doing those stunts. I'm going to guess probably no. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie. But
well,
if you're like elephants...
this was back in the day before there were like animal...
There were some rules. I don't think that they just for the sheer expense of the elephant, I'm sure they had her in as few scenes as possible. That film was not made in Georgia. That was made in Palm Beach, Florida, which is where Reynolds lives.
The palm trees.
Well, yes. So we were
we saw the preview
and definitely not filmed in Georgia.
Yeah.
Now what I really want to talk about is Smokey and the Bandit 3.
Oh, right. Cause I was like, hey, there's a 3. And you were like, no.
Yeah. And then we watched the trailer and we were very confused cause we were like, isn't that Snowball? But he's got a Burt Reynolds mustache. Mm-hmm. It was very strange.
Yes.
So here's the thing. Smokey and the Bandit 3. Burt Reynolds didn't come back. Sally Field didn't come back. I read something that from one of the people who worked on the script. So Jackie Gleason was like the main creative, like the main like talent, I guess, behind the Smokey and the Bandit 3. Like, I guess like it revived his career and he was like loved Smokey and the Bandit. Right. Loved doing the movies. So he had like approval on the script. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the rumor is that the original script for Smokey and the Bandit 3 was called Smokey is the Bandit, or maybe that's the tagline. Maybe, or I think that might have been the title of the movie. Smokey is the Bandit. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And Smokey, of course, is the euphemism for cops, right? Mm-hmm. And that's Buford T. Justice. So apparently in the original movie, Buford T. Justice played Smokey and the Bandit.
Okay.
And he like kind of became Smokey. So I don't know
the Bandit.
Because, according to legend, when they screened it for test audiences, audiences were really confused and did not like it and didn't understand the two different Smokies.
Mm-hmm.
And so they reshot all the scenes that had Jackie Gleason as Smokey with Snowball as Smokey.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And there is a trailer, which I did watch, that exists that is basically Jackie Gleason describing, like, that movie with him like being, he's like, you know, like, I have to become the thing that I hate to chase down Smokey. I have to become, this time Smokey is the Bandit, you know what I mean? And there's also a picture that I've seen where like Jackie Gleason is dressed up very much like Burt Reynolds with like the mustache and everything.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Gleason scares me.
He scares me a little bit too. Yeah.
Is he still alive?
Oh no.
Okay.
No, he's been gone a while. Anyway, so that's Smokey and the Bandit 3. It is unlikely that I'll ever watch it, but I was very entertained likely by the lore of this bad movie that they had to save, and it was still bad, but they reshot it because they were trying to salvage it. What a confusing idea.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my goodness.
Okay, well, I guess that's going to wrap it up for our discussion on the Georgia Made podcast about Smokey and the Bandit, our two-part discussion on Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey, Bandit,
mustaches, cars. So thanks for listening, guys. And you can continue the conversation with us. Did you love this movie and think that we just don't get it? If you do want to tell us, we're open to discussion about it. So you can, of course, find us on social media at Georgia Made Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And you can find us on Twitter at Georgia Made Pod. Also, you could subscribe to this podcast. We'd like that.
We would.
We're on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Podbean. We're on a lot of things. So subscribe, maybe leave us a review.
Please.
Let us know what you think of the show.
Thank you.
Well, Sarah, I'm thinking about growing my own mustache.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you have the skill?
I think.
Do you have the testosterone?
I feel like I might after watching this movie.
Okay.
So I think I'm ready. After being exposed to this movie, I feel like I might just have what it takes to grow a sexy mustache.
I'm looking forward to seeing your red mustache.
Oh, thank you.